Chair.
Aye.
Sir Higgins.
These microphones don't amplify, and I can barely hear you already. So if people can just make sure that they speak loudly in this room, because it's going to be really hard.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. And we'll have to ask that all of our conversations be kept to a minimum as well.
What?
Exactly. All right, so we start.
Mr. Chair, I know the division report.
Yeah, Senator Murphy, House File 928, Senator Murphy moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, procedural point here. We are working on the House file, House File 928. So we are working with the division report that was on the Senate file, but really what we're doing is adopting that division report to the House file. We will have additional then amendments to the division report. But just remember, when we're done here, we'll be adding all of that to the House file. Not to get confused.
And Senator Murphy, as you go through this, we have a fiscal note, which is not complex, but has a number of items on it. And I recognize that a lot of this is non-general fund, that there are some parts of the bill, or I don't know if there are amendments to take care of the general fund concerns, but if you can obviously pay some attention to that. So Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and members, there's a sheet that Ms. Boyd put together. It says SF 1455 on top. It shows a little spreadsheet there of the expenditures that we're talking about. Members, if you look at the top, that's the enhanced driver's license. That's paid for out of the special revenue account. This is a Senator Stump provision. The next one is the pedestrian accommodations on trunk highway bridges. This is all done through bonding revenue. There is a section in here on Minnesota Council of Transportation. That is carried in our Senate budget plan. There is sections 34 through 38, 53 and 55 that deal with passenger rail. This is $1.396 million. We have an amendment to pull that out of the bill. That's being carried in the House finance bill as well. We'll deal with that there. There's railroad safety technology grants. It's a small amount of money, which is general fund money. There's the Section 49, which is an environmental impact statement. Those are two impact statements. They're $200,000. They're for. We have an amendment which asks MnDOT to take that out of their existing allotment. So we'll get that number to zero. The last two is a seasonal load restriction prohibition. This is $4 million out of the trunk highway fund. We'll have an amendment to take that out. We don't have $4 million to spend on it. Then there's the Sioux Trail Transit feasibility study, which is $250,000 of general fund money. We're moving that to the statewide rail plan, so it would be funded through there. It won't be in this bill. Members, that's basically how we rectify our fiscal note. And Mr. Chairman, if you're ready, I'll start offering up some amendments to take care of this.
Well, just Sir Murphy, could I ask just for a minute or so about what's in the bill in terms of substantive changes or anything else other than what you mentioned relative to the finance aspects of it?
I don't think there's anything that the finance committee, I mean, there's no major changes in the way that we fund transportation or Met Council or anything. It's all policy.
Okay. Any highlights to the policy?
Well, there probably is, but it's too early in the morning, Mr. Chairman.
What's that? Well, if it's too early for you.
Yeah, if you want me to go through the bill, I can go through the bill, Mr. Chairman. We're wasting time, I think.
11 bills on the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, okay, real quick in the bill, sections 1 and 2 are double provision, and this deals with trunk highway bridges. designing and building bridges so that they're ADA compliant, so that it takes into consideration pedestrians, bike trails, and other forms of transportation. I don't believe the department has a problem with this. As a matter of fact, moving forward, they've said that this is probably a good idea. There is a couple sections in here, members, about deputy registers. Senator Sieben's bill that deals with corporate deputy registers. This is something that Senator Marty will probably offer an amendment on the Senate floor to do. Let's see. There's some towing provisions in here, which are an extension from last year. There's also a Senator Carlson bill in here, which was heard in Senator Moy's committee, that deals, that imposes a gross misdemeanor penalty on a person if their careless driving results in a death of another person. I thought that's probably pretty substantial, Mr. Chairman. Don't block the boxes in here. There's a Thomasoni provision in here that deals with mounting devices on either the dashboard or the rear view mirror in cases that deal with interlock safety equipment and things like that, and better ways to try to
Senator Thomasoni.
Part four is mindful positioning, but part three is not. And I don't know what that driver's feedback and safety monitoring of the remote you need behind, slightly above, or slightly below the mirror.
Yeah.
That's a camera, I believe.
Right, that one's mine.
So I don't,
you have the other half.
Mine is low positioning.
Mr. Chairman, what page is that?
Page eight.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator Stumpf's enhanced driver's license starts in Section 13 and carries on through 18, and then, through 23, and then there's a couple other provisions later on in the bill. Senator Latz has some language in here about the issue of suspended driver's license and being suspended multiple times. There's language in here that asks that the commissioner apply for funding for federal, state, local, or regional transportation corridors. There's some railroad language in here also, Mr. Chairman, and that's about it. There's really not a whole lot of high points in here.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have seat belts in here. We don't have any of that passenger safety stuff. We put that in the funding bill.
Well, that's great, Senator Murphy. Just wanted to get a flavor of it. So you said you have amendments to offer, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do. Mr. Chairman, I'll start with A33. And members, as this is being passed out, members, this is we do have some motor carrier language in here for railroads. This is the compromise that was reached between the railroads and the employees' unions, and several other folks that had vested interest in this. Members, this is the issue about railroad employees who have to be carted from, a lot of times these crews go out and they work on railroads all over the United States, but they're away from home, and so they have to have like a, 15-passenger van or whatever to haul them from the work site to where their hotel is or wherever else they're staying. All this does is make sure that those people who are driving those vans, so that they meet some of the criteria that's in here, just ask for, some simple stuff like a background check, make sure that the person has a physical examination. it's much like what they do for type 3 school buses, right? So it's... it's an agreement that was reached between all the parties involved. So, Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion on the 833.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion on the 833 amendment. Senator,
just a general question. I'm curious how this amendment relates to finance.
I was wondering the same thing, but
I can't hear you.
My question, Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, my question was, how does this relate to appropriations and finance that makes it appropriate for this committee? I realize any member can offer an amendment before a committee, but yeah, we try to keep amendments to finance.
Right. And Mr. Chairman and Senator Frederickson, this also clarifies what MnDOT's role is in this process, and we did it in a way so that there's so that we reduce the fiscal impact on MnDOT to zero. That's why we're offering it. Sorry, I didn't mention that.
All right, further questions or discussion on the 833 amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, and then I have the 834 amendment.
Okay, if we can have that distributed.
Mr. Chairman and members, this takes out both the provision that's carried in the House Finance Bill in relation to passenger rail, and it also takes out the reference to the Sioux Trail transitway. So this definitely reduces the cost of the those provisions.
So, Senator Murphy, again, it's the Sioux Trail that was $250,000, and what was the other section?
The passenger rail duties, Mr. Chairman, was 1.396 per year.
Okay. All right. Is there further discussion on the 834 amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, the next one is the 835 amendment. And members, the 835 amendment is some clarifying language on what is supposed to be, this is to the point part of our bill that allows deputy registers to start using credit cards for a payment process. You know, it's one of the few functions that that we have in state government where credit cards can't be used. And that's not because of the department or any of the deputy registers members. It's because of the credit card companies, frankly, and the way that they charge their fees. Well, we finally figured out a way that we can use credit cards, make sure that the fees are paid for. This cleans up how those fees get paid for, Mr. Chairman, members, and I would renew that motion.
Does anybody have the 835 amendment? Further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, we also have the 836 amendment, and this is to one of the provisions that I talked about earlier, and this is Senator Bach and Senator Scoy's seasonal load restriction on a certain trunk highway, and we're this amendment takes that off there. This is the department estimated it would cost $4 million to do this. Members, the reason why it was in the bill is because this stretch of road is going to be rebuilt, and it's the quickest from point A to point B between where the timber market is and where the timber is actually grown. So it's a great haul road. The road is degraded to the point where they're going to replace it in 3 years. The problem is if we continue to allow overweight vehicles on this, it will completely destroy the roadbed. So instead of costing $4 million to fix, it's probably going to be three or four times that much because you have to go back in and rectify the roadbed. So Upon further review, we can't do this.
We have the 836 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I just was glancing at section 49 and just wondering what that's about, requiring the environmental impact statement to be done.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, that was my last amendment that I've got here. This environmental impact statement, there's two portions of Highway 14 where the environmental impact statement has expired, and they need to have those upgraded so that they qualify for federal money. And the only reason that we're asking District 7 to do these upgrades is so that we can get some federal money, and it's Highway 14. And that is one of the most deadly stretches of road any place in Minnesota. And so we want to make sure that if there's a second round of federal stimulus money, that Highway 14 is going to be able to at least apply for it. And what we're asking is the commissioner to perform these functions within their own appropriations to District 7, and that's the A37 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I would offer that.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of us at this table very strongly support Section 41.
Louder. It's your job.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dick Andretti Dave supports this wholeheartedly.
Is that correct, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, that's very correct. Senator Sharon, actually, it was her bill and myself and Senator Fredrickson and the group down there.
Mr. Chair, where is this stretch of highway exactly?
I think one of the sections that we're talking about is in Senator Day's district that goes from Owatonna to the
east. Mr. Chairman,
east.
It's actually the section between New Ulm and Rochester.
Okay.
That's the projected NASCAR track?
There's going to be 40-degree banks on the corners. It's going to be great. And, Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion on the A37 amendment.
Okay, we have the A37 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
And, Mr. Chairman, the last one that I have, as soon as I – oh, here it is. Mr. Chairman and members, this is the A32 amendment, and I'm going to explain how this has a fiscal impact, Senator. Oh, I thought somebody was whistling at me, but those days are long gone. Mr. Chairman, the A32 amendment deals with the Granite City Crossing. This is the bridge in St. Cloud that goes over the Mississippi River. They want to name this the Granite City Crossing. As you see, the reference to 161.139, that's a section of law that says we're going to let you do this, but you got to pay for it. So this does have a zero fiscal impact, Senator Fredrickson, and that's why we're offering this up here. So.
Okay, we have the 832 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's it for the amendments that I had.
Further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that there is one more amendment to be offered. And I don't see Senator Higgins here. I know that she has it.
She could probably offer it on the floor.
Senator Thomas on it?
Yeah, that'd be fine. We can do it on the floor.
Senator Higgins, can Senator Murphy explain why 8.3132 is the reason for it? Just out of curiosity.
You know, Mr. Chairman, curiosity killed the cat.
Well, I'm curious.
What line was he talking about? Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, that's simply for, right now we have a key interlock system in the state of Minnesota where if you get a bunch of DWIs piled up, you can go down and you can apply into this program. What they do is they monitor, you know, any alcohol intake that you may have. And before your car will start, you know, you have to go through a procedure so that the interlock is made up and you can actually start your car. What has happened is that some of these people have a device on their car. They know that the owner might be a little tank. You know, he might be coming out of Jimmy's bar on some Friday night and he's had four or five and he might be right on the limit. And so he has somebody else hop in behind the steering wheel, do the interlock, which includes, you know, an alcohol kind of a breath test type thing, starts the car up and then lets his buddy get in who's had four or five and then they drive off. What this does is it says that if the department feels it's necessary, they can place one of these cameras in the car so that when the car starts, it takes a picture of who's sitting behind the steering wheel, and then it takes a picture of who's sitting behind the steering wheel every so often as that car is in motion to make sure that it's the person who's supposed to be behind the wheel. Because a lot of times what happens, well, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but the way that some people play the system is they grab somebody else to do the interlock and then they drive off in their hammers. If it covers something that it's not intended to, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, we'll fix it.
Right.
What kind of fixer are you going to put on it?
It's got to do with work-related situations where a company might be monitoring employees in a van or in a vehicle. I think we should talk about it.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
All right, further discussion on the bill? Senator Murphy, is there?
Okay, all right. Nope, I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chairman. And I think there's another motion that needs to be made, Mr. Watson, so that we get the right language in the right spot.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify that the motion is that House File 928, as amended by the division report, as amended by the other amendments, be recommended to pass.
And referred to the Committee on Rules, Mr. Chairman. And that would be my motion.
Senator Murphy, just so members of the committee understand, just consulting with Mr. Mossman, at least in terms of general fund dollars, we still have some money left which can be covered by the limited money we have. Those are the railroad safety technology grants. That remains in the bill. And I think before you were just talking to Mr. Mossman about that as well. So just so members understand that we do have that, although it is covered by what we by what we still have within the committee. Mm-hmm. So, Senator Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would make the Watson motion.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's motion in front of us. This bill is amended to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Rules Committee. Any further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Murphy. Okay, we're going to just skip one bill on the agenda.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Okay. Okay, we'll see you after a while.
Well, House File 111, Senator Bonner. If people are leaving the room because we finished one bill, we got a big agenda, so please keep the conversations down to nothing as you depart the room. We have a division report. Senator Betzel.
I'll move the division report.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was heard in division as the Senate file 131, and there is a division report on that. Since then, the House file has come over, and the House file incorporates many, but not all, of the provisions that were included in the division report. So what we have is an amendment to the House file that's a little bit different from the amendment to the Senate file coming out of the division report. So I think it may be appropriate if we get the A1 amendment passed out to really be working on the House file as amended by the A1 amendment.
I'll withdraw that motion.
Senator Betzel, if you have the amendment, do.
I have. This is to the House File 111. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 111.
Okay, with Senator Betzel's motion to put the bill in proper order. Senator Bonham, have you seen? Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins, I'm sorry.
I didn't know what the motion was because I couldn't hear it.
Okay.
I am my mother's daughter, after all. She can hear anything.
What?
But,
okay, Senator Betzold moved the adoption of the language which puts the bill in the House, in the order of the House file, so we're dealing with that language, as opposed to adopting the division report.
So it's matching everything?
Yes.
This is the Senate language.
Yes. Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Okay, so why don't we, Senator Higgins, you're...
I'm good.
Okay. All right, so let's, Senator Betzel, if you'll renew your motion.
I'll move the A1 amendment, which would put House File 111 in the shape that the Senate Budget Division considered this bill as Senate File, whatever it was, 131.
Okay. Again, we have Senator Betzel's motion in front of us, having withdrawn the first motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. And then, Senator Bonham, would like you to just explain what the bill is for a minute, the financial implications. There has been a request, and sometimes we'll do this in the Finance Committee, where there's been a request for testimony. We're not going to take lengthy testimony. We'll have somebody from each side of the issue who would like to offer a perspective. But Senator Bonham, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is a bill that requires the State Board of Investment to divest itself from companies doing business in the energy sector in Iran. And the United States government has already passed a law saying that we cannot be invested in companies doing business with this sector in Iran. And so what this bill does is it conforms state policy to what already exists at the national level. This is not new for the state of Minnesota. 2 years ago, I actually carried a bill that required the State Board of Investment to divest itself from doing business in the Sudan region. That bill that year went to a board resolution at the State Board of Investment, and then the next year Senator Pappas carried similar legislation and it did pass the House and Senate floor. What we are saying with this legislation is that we as states can use peaceful means, economic sanctions, to support the very serious things that we have taken on as a country. And it's interesting that while we are proposing this, that in fact, when President Obama was a U.S. senator, he offered the enabling legislation to allow states to do this because back then he had the vision that this would be an important role for states to play as we move forward promoting our efforts for diplomacy and peace and using all means to do that rather than pursuing military action. some of the concerns around this legislation. I think that, you know, especially, you know, the our State Department came out just yesterday and again reiterated that Iran remains the number one on the list of state sponsors of terror. And so I don't think there's been any controversy over whether or not we are concerned about the country of Iran. I think the controversy at the legislature has been whether or not this is the right action to take. And so people have said, you know, well, you'll incur some trading fees. You could incur $2 to $3 million of trading fees if we were to go down this route. And what I would say to that is, first of all, we are only talking about divesting from the companies, the international companies that do business in the energy sector. And right now, that's a pretty shaky area of the world. We know that that our investments might very well be at risk, and so it might also be the most prudent thing that we could do. And that when our state investment board is trading, they incur costs every single day. That is the nature of that business. And so when we alert companies that have been put on this list that, in fact, if they continue doing business in this sector, we will divest. We give them 15 months, so this isn't an abrupt, all of a sudden, we're divesting. There's a long period of time. In the beginning, we say you have to divest the state board 50% of your holdings. Then over a much longer time period, 100%. And if at any time things change, there's a provision in the law that says we'll no longer follow this course. If the U.S. government changes its policy, there's a provision in this bill that says we'll comply with what the direction the U.S. foreign policy takes. So I think that covers the high points. I'm happy to take questions. With regard to the fiscal note, I believe there's a fiscal note that says there we might incur $15,000 of costs to prepare the list of which companies that would involve. There is a service that does that sort of thing, and I have talked to Mr. Bicker. Other states have done this. It is very likely we could just use their list. In the worst-case scenario, we would need to hire a service to prepare this list, and that would be that cost.
Okay. And Senator Bonhoeff and members, if you'll note the fiscal note, there's both the cost of preparation of the list and it's not a direct cost for general fund, but also the possibility of lost earnings to the state board with the divestiture. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoeff, if in the normal process of doing business, the State Board of Investment were planning to make some changes, are they bound by the limits that you put on that they have to wait for 18 months? Or can they make normal business decisions regarding these investments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, they could make these trades tomorrow if they so would choose to do that. And they may, you know, they may end up doing that given the uncertainty in that part of the world right now. We don't know.
They're not prohibited.
No.
Chair.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. What's the percentage of the investment board's total assets that are in this area? It's like 0.5% or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, something like that, but I could call Mr. Bicker.
It's just a pimple.
1%.
I mean, just a very.
Yes, 1% of the overall holdings. Thank you.
Other questions for Senator Bonhoeff? Again, I know there are a couple people who've asked to testify, one for each side. I'm not sure who wants to do that. Is there somebody who wishes to testify against the bill? Please come to the front and identify yourself for the record, please.
And Mr. Chairman, the bill has made many stops, so I don't think I will have testifiers on the other side unless, after upon hearing, I've changed my mind.
So, welcome to the committee. Again, if you could just identify yourself for the record, please.
In here. Done this before. My name is Karen Redleaf, and I am testifying today as an economist. I'm also sort of a financial expert. Mr. Chairman, senators, I've thought a lot about the different
aspects of my expertise that I could call on to testify today. And I've decided to speak on a discipline that's called game theory, which has to do with what the outcome's going to be when opposing interests are working against each other. And in game theory, we speak of something called a credible threat. A credible threat has a couple of elements. For a threat to be credible, the state has to be making a demand that the person that you're, the entity that's being demanded, the party, has to be able to comply with it. If they can't, the threat isn't credible. They have to promise to do something that would actually punish them if they don't comply with the threat. And then they have to actually follow through with the punishment if the action isn't taken. So this bill fails on all three counts. The demand is that the state is asking the companies to stop doing business with Iran. But if this business is profitable, the company can't stop. The companies are bound to make the most profit they can make for their shareholders. That's by law since 1919 in the Dodge Brothers versus Ford Motor Company. So companies, if the company complied with the threat and gave up a...
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Karen Redleaf.
Ms. Redleaf, didn't we do something like this in South Africa at one time because of apartheid? This would have been back, Mr. Chairman, when I was first in the legislature, about 94 or so. The University of Minnesota, I believe, had money invested in South Africa, and we made sure that they divested those interests.
And you can tell them to, but there's, I would, the question is, does that punish South Africa? The question now would be, does that punish Iran? And I would have to argue as an economist, no, for three reasons. The companies won't divest unless you absolutely compel them to, which mm-hmm. they could sue you if you did that, because mm-hmm. that would be discrimination. And corporations mm-hmm. have personhood under the law, and they would sue if you discriminated against them in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, and here's my point. Discrimination, in my opinion, has taken 400-plus hostages and holding them for 444 days. And let's see, what else have those guys over there done? Oh, yeah, they were involved in blowing up the Marine Corps barracks in Lebanon, which killed over 400 of my brother Marines. So I'm voting for Senator Bonhoff's bill. These companies that are working in Iran that are invested in Iran, that is so unpatriotic, it's unbelievable. Now I'm going to start beating the Republican drum here. Mr. Chairman, this is idiotic that we allow anybody to do business with governments that are trying to destroy us, period. And if these businessmen have problems with us saying that they can't do that, tough.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that this directive is more to the State Board of Investment. And so it's like putting the companies on notice that if you don't divest, we will. So it's our action on the state board. We're not telling them what they have to do. As
right.
you say, the companies can do as they wish.
Right.
But if they want to continue to do as they wish, we're suggesting that perhaps it's the state that will divest of their investment in that company.
And the second component,
I'm not sure how that...
The second component of a credible threat is that it has to punish the person that you're threatening. If the state sells its stock in certain companies, it doesn't punish the company. I own 3M stock, and I periodically get angry at 3M and think about selling it. But if I sold my 3M stock to you, Senator Olson, that would have zero impact on 3M.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Reilly, I think that's beside the point. This is a matter of conscience on our part.
If you want to sell your stock, you certainly can. But it doesn't. You're threatening the company with something that doesn't punish the company. So, and then the third component is the actual follow through. And there's a section of the bill that says
that if the sale of the stock is counter to the fiduciary responsibilities of the state board to its pensioners, then they don't have to do it. If
Ms.
the investments Redleaf, are properly, has that been amended?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Redleaf, we did take that out of the bill, and that was the amendment that we just spoke about.
I'm sorry, I haven't followed all the recent amendments. So,
yep, Mr. Chair, Ms. Redleaf, that in the last committee, the State Board of Investments, as well as other board members who were here, said that they felt more comfortable with the legislation if that wasn't gray, if it was a clear directive, and so that amendment was made, and that's the legislation that's before you. And I'm hearing your concerns. I don't concur, but I hear your concerns.
I wouldn't expect you to, since I'm testifying against your bill, but.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Redley, maybe you could provide us with a list of companies that actually do business in Iran so that we can boycott those businesses. Maybe that would be a better way of going about it.
I don't have the list, but there are people who would prepare the list. But people can decide individually to boycott companies, or as a body you can decide to boycott a company. That the other thing that you can do is, as a shareholder, you can bring resolutions and tell the company to divest as a shareholder. If you sell your stock, you give up any way that you have to negotiate with companies, because that's the way companies are only bound, and this is because of corporate personhood legislation. We could change that. You guys could change that, and that would be wonderful if you would do that. But under corporate personhood, corporations are bound to only care about the financial interests of their shareholders. So you don't have authority over them except as shareholders with a financial interest. Once you divest, you would lose that. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
and Ms. Redleaf, recently French energy company Total indicated that because of sanctions against Iran, it cannot have an active role in a recent gas field project in Iran. Mm-hmm. And there have been 14 other states that are pursuing this legislation, as well as we can see from the direction our foreign policy is taking, that that we do feel that we have some power to exercise economic sanctions. And so that's what this legislation does. And, you know, it's always a matter of interpretation whether or not we are effective or not effective. But given the tools, the peaceful tools that we have at our disposal, I am continue to be committed to following this direction.
Ms. Redleaf?
Well, what I would say is that as long as Iran is selling something that people in the world need, it's going to be profitable. And so you can decide that certain corporations can't participate in that profitable business, and you can attempt to use whatever leverage you have to tell them that they can't participate in that profitable business. But it would be more threatening to do something that would make it not a profitable business. So I would recommend, a transformation of our economy so that it runs on wind and solar. But as long as people need oil, as long as this country is addicted to oil and Iran has oil, it's going to be profitable to sell oil in the world. And if they can't sell it to the U.S., then they will sell it to China. But they're going to be able to sell it at a profit because the world runs on oil. So I believe that it's not a credible threat. That's the tone I've decided to take today in my testimony, that as long as Iran is producing something that the world needs, you can tell people that they can't participate in trading in that commodity, but as long as people need it, it's going to be profitable to sell it. So I could decide, I could be a cocaine addict, and I could decide that my cocaine dealer was a scummy individual and I didn't want to deal with them. But unless I get off cocaine, I'll just have to send a middle person to buy my cocaine for me because I still need cocaine. And so the fact that my dealer is scummy and I don't want to deal with them doesn't change the fact that I need the product that they're selling. And unless I stop needing the product, all I'm going to do is add a middle person who's just going to add another layer of, you know, it's just going to cost more
to get, because there's going to be another person who has to make profit on the transaction. So the only way to threaten my cocaine dealer is to not to say, I'm not going to buy directly from you, but to say, I'm not going to use cocaine anymore. And the only way to threaten a company that produces oil is to say, we're going to get off oil.
Thank you. I don't have other questions for Ms. Redley, but I guess I want to ask, and I recognize that your testimony relates to an economic analysis, and so useful to have that perspective. So you might be the person to answer, and if not, I'll throw the question out for the committee, but follow up on what Senator Murphy asked about. I want to be a little bit careful because it's a little bit in the past. But Senator Murphy asked about the legislation in regard to South Africa. And I thought that Nelson Mandela had stated that the American economic boycott was helpful in bringing about societal change within South Africa, and that he welcomed it. So I recognize you're not testifying to that extent, but if I'm not mistaken, I think, at least Senator Murphy, to follow up on your comment, I think Mandela suggested that he thought what had been done domestically, whether state by state or on a federal level, relative to South Africa was of utility. But any other questions for Ms. Redley? Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bonhoeff, is there somebody you wish? Okay. Further discussion on Senator Betzel?
Well, Mr. Chair, I've happened to have heard this bill at all four stops. I think Senator Pappas is at all four stops, too. Has heard the state and local government policy committee. Has heard the Pensions Commission. And has heard the state government budget division, and now here. I've concluded I'm not supporting the bill. It gets into areas of foreign relations, which, frankly, I don't know what the shifts are going to be with the Obama administration as opposed to the Bush administration. It certainly does get into some decision-making with the State Board of Investment that I prefer we did not do. I think we need to have them make decisions as well. I'm opposing the bill.
Okay. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Berlin.
I'll make the motion for Senator Bonner.
Senator Berlin moves that House File 111, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? Oh, I'm sorry. We're waiting for Senator Metzen. And we have Senator Berlin's motion. Is there further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Bonner.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next we've got, I think, Senator Saltzman wanted to get to a conference committee. Okay, if she's here, I'm hoping this will be a quick bill, and then we want to get back to Senator Stephen. Senator Saltzman, Senate File 1005. Senator Murphy moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I am here with Senate File 1276, which establishes the Stillwater Lift Bridge Endowment Account. And as many of you know, the St. Croix River Crossing is a very important project in my community. And in the Memorandum of Understanding, which was of agreement, which was signed, one of the provisions was to preserve the historic lift bridge. And this account is to be established before the bridge can be opened, the new bridge can be opened. And there's interest in getting this account established as early as possible so that they can start to receive funding, et cetera. And the point of this is to preserve the existing bridge, to do work on it after it is closed so that it becomes a walkway, a bike trail, and also to allow it to, continue operating. And so MnDOT is here today to explain this particular account.
morning, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Kristen Schumler. I'm a historian and archaeologist with MnDOT, and we've been involved in the development of this endowment fund. As Senator Saltzman indicated, the preservation of the historic lift bridge is a key component to the construction of the new St. Croix River crossing. And once the new bridge is opened, it's possible that the old bridge will be taken off the trunk highway system, and so a funding source was needed to be created so that we could continue to maintain and operate the lift bridge going forward as a pedestrian trail. So we hired some consultants to help us figure out how to best establish that endowment fund. They recommended the fund be created with the State Board of Investments so that MnDOT could access that money. And so what this legislation does is to create that endowment account and allow us to start putting funds in to generate some interest so that over the next few years, before the bridge is opened, it can start earning interest.
Sir Dave.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem with what you're doing, but I do have a question, and that I voted out there. How do you make it a walk bridge when you have the boats in the Stillwater Marina that need the bridge lifted to go underneath to get into St. Croix?
Very important question, Mr. Chair and Senator Day. That's why we need this account, because we need to continue to keep the bridge operating as a lift bridge, but so that it can go up and down. And so that it is down, and right now it's on a schedule, and that it would be able to maintain a similar schedule in the future so that when there was some traffic, that the bridge could continue to operate. And that's the intent of having this account, to continue to maintain the bridge and also to operate it.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, there need to be, during the summertime, somebody there to move the bridge. Mm-hmm.
Further questions for Sir Robler?
I'm just wondering what kind of program will be set up so we can solicit private contributions and gifts so less tax dollars have to be used for it.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we'll likely work with the Minnesota Historical Society, the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, to let people know that this is out there, the Stillwater HPC, Heritage Preservation Commission, to notify people, let them know about the account, and encourage gifts.
Okay. Sir Wilson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear that.
She moved the bill.
Oh, thank you.
Okay with you.
Thank you. I would love to have the bill moved.
Sir Wilson moves that Senate file 1005 be recommended to pass. And I also believe, Sir Murphy, as you're leaving, that this bill is also within your omnibus bill as well. Mm-hmm. So Senator Saltz moves that Senate file 1005 be recommended to pass. All those as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Saltz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Then we have Senator Sieben, Senate file 1331. There's a division report.
Mr. Chair, I'll move a division report.
Senator Bessel moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Senator Rest is here to help me present the bill as well. She's been very instrumental in doing what we're trying to do here today, which is Senate File 1331. What we're proposing to do is to adopt the A3 Delete Everything Amendment. And I can go through then and explain the A3 Delete All Amendment. Do members have it?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it's rather long. So, Mr. Chair and members, the A3 Amendment contains provisions that the Subcommittee on Elections have already heard and passed, or the Senator Rest Committee have passed. So it's turning into an omnibus elections bill. And some of the provisions that are included here, I'll run through them, just give a general overview, but if you want to hear more about any of them, please stop me. First, there's Senator Scheid bill that pertains to affirming versus swearing, so that election judges can affirm instead of say the word swear. The Bonhoff, Senator Bonhoff's early primary bill, which would move the primary to June, is included in the A3 amendment. Senator Rest's provision, Senate File 278, which would give procedures for what would occur in a U.S. Senate vacancy, how to fill the remainder of the term. Senator Pappas' bill relating to candidates and how their affidavit of residency. A bill that I carried relating to who can be a challenger at a polling place. Again, a Senator Pappas bill relating to online registration so that voters could register to vote online. Senator Erickson Rope's bill pertaining to the non-controversial provisions pertaining to the overseas and military voting. Senator Rest's bill, Senate File 745, for a vacancy and nomination, so to establish procedures for what to do if how to replace the candidate if the candidate becomes seriously ill or dies before an election. Senate File 768, which is a bill I carried relating to recount procedures, which many of these came about as in response to the this most recent U.S. Senate election race. For instance, we would change the threshold for what would trigger a recount from 1/2 to 1/4%. Senate File 801 had optical scan ballot technical changes. It gets rid of a lot of obsolete language pertaining to the colors of ballots and how to mark ballots. Senator Gerlach, Senate File 804. These were Secretary of State recommendations, again, for technical and miscellaneous clarifications. Senator Pappas, Senate File 834, pertaining to redistricting for certain cities that have elections in years that end in number one. My Senate File 970, pertaining to early voting, which the language that's included in the amendment is the language that passed through Senator Betzold's committee. Senate File 991, again, some Secretary of State election administration changes. And then Senate File 1331, a bill relating to absentee voting. Many of these, again, suggestions came about as a result of the most recent Senate race. So, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions. We also have a couple of, after you adopt the A3 amendment, we do have a couple of amendments to that.
And Senator Stephen, is the A3 amendment the entirety of what you'd like to put in front of us?
At this time,
and
yes.
It's a delete everything amendment.
Correct.
So, Senator Betzel?
And Mr. Chair, the State Government Budget Division did review all the bills that we had that had perceived to be fiscal impacts. The fiscal note that you have before you is only on 1331, which is the vehicle bill here. As I recall, I think many of the bills that we have that are supposed to be in here were going to be paid for by Help America Voting Act funds, so there would be not an impact on the general fund. But since we don't have all the fiscal notes here,
Mr. Chair,
sure, we may have to double check that.
And I believe that Mr. Mossman has more to add to this, but all of the bills that are included, we do have the fiscal notes here, and Mr. Mossman has reviewed.
Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair, members, I do have fiscal notes that we can have copied and passed out for the language of Senate File 278, 768, 970, in addition to 1331. And Senator Betzold is correct. The all of those provisions, there are minor costs of the $116,000 in 1331. Senate File 1331, $96,000 one time for Senate File 970, and some moving around of how the funds in the other, with the other language, but in all cases, the Secretary of State is indicating that the money would be paid for from miscellaneous special revenue fund from PAMA funds.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, in addition, of the bills that are now part of the delete everything amendment, 11 of those bills are on the Senate floor. We're just trying to get them together in a package, and they do not have they did not have any fiscal impact at all, either even on the money.
All right, Senator Bessel moves adoption of the delete everything. The A3 amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bessel.
I've got a technical A6 amendment that apparently Mr. Potter and Mr. Watson, as they went through the bill, identified just some grammatical things, just very technical matters that need to be cleaned up on the A6 amendment.
Okay. Has that been distributed? We've got the A6 amendment in front of us, moved by Senator Bessel. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Well, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A4 amendment. Meningitis. Don't make me explain it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is part, it was originally part of Senate File 661, and we've been carrying it in the higher ed bill that has passed the full Senate, but it's, the governor actually objects to it being in the higher ed bill, and it more appropriately belongs in this bill. This requires Minsky to send lists of students and where they live to the Secretary of State so it can be additional proof of residency. And we request that other post-secondary institutions also do that.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, we're happy to carry this amendment on this bill. Like Senator Pappas said, it's already passed the Senate floor, and it's more just more appropriate to be in an election bill than in the higher ed bill.
This does look like it's sliding a little bit into pure policy.
Mr. Chairman, I just missed the deadline to get in the delete all amendment. They wanted to include it, but I didn't talk to them in time to get it in. But it would be part of the omnibus bill. It has no fiscal impact, and it's already passed the Senate floor.
There's no point. All right, we have Senator Pappas' motion on the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Thomasoni?
Yes, I have the A7 amendment that I'll move for the author.
Mr. Chair, the A7 amendment came at the request of some of the local cities. It would simply extend the timeline for when counties could accept some available HAVA funds.
Okay. Good. I'm glad you explained it. For a second, I thought it was going to be slots in voting places.
Not a bad idea.
I realize this is kind of an aside, but Senator Thomasoni, would there be any place slots would not be appropriate other than maybe actually within the sanctuary of a church?
Wait a minute,
they have
bingo.
Well, no, I said within the sanctuary itself. All right, we have the A7 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Let me just ask a couple of questions, if I might, about the bill. These aren't finance questions. But Senator Sieben, there's obviously been lots of discussion about recounts. And I was trying to absorb what you're doing with recounts and didn't get a chance to do it. So maybe you could just offer some of the details of.
Sure. Mr. Chair, one provision that is in here that I mentioned is it would, in order to trigger a recount, the threshold would be lowered from 0.5% to 0.25%. Another provision that is in here is that a candidate would need to request a recount to occur. There was a Supreme Court recount this past election where it was not even necessarily wanted by both parties, but under law they were required to conduct the recount, which obviously is very expensive. Other provisions specifically related to the recount that aren't sort of technical in nature. Mr. Chair, there's also Senator Ress reminded me that there is a provision in here where, if you recall, the Supreme Court in one of their judgments ruled that that the individual candidates could reject a specific absentee ballot, and we are taking that provision, or we're amending the law so that, proposing to amend the law so that candidates would not be able to accept or reject an absentee ballot in a recount.
Okay. And Ms. Broderick?
Mr. Chairman, there's one other provision of some interest, perhaps Section 130 governs how the candidate representatives must conduct themselves at a recount required to be Minnesota residents or registered voters.
And if I can just inquire now, Senator West, within your committee, Senator Sieben, is there a subcommittee that you chair or how?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I chair the State and Local Government Operations Committee, and Senator Sieben came on the committee this session, and I appointed her to chair the subcommittee on elections. All of these bills were heard both in the subcommittee on elections and the full committee, and then the ones that had a HAVA impact came to the State Government Finance Committee, with the exception of one bill, and that is 1331, the base bill for this bill. And that bill was heard only in the full committee.
So I'm not sure where the question is directed, but with all the discussion of absentee ballots, was there a discussion within the committee or subcommittee about absentee voting and how it ought to be handled?
Mr. Chairman, the base bill here, 1331, was and it does deal with absentee balloting and changing some of the provisions so that absentee ballots are kept in a central location rather than sent out to the precincts. They're counted within frequently by a ballot board before the election, and then their ballots are placed in the ballot box. If the actual application is flawed, the election officials are required to notify the prospective voter that their application was flawed, and they are to be given the opportunity to correct the application. So there were a number of things with regard to taking a lesson from this past election that Senator Sieben's bill, and these are recommendations also from the Secretary of State's office and local election officials across the state with whom they consulted to improve the absentee balloting process.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, early voting, although it doesn't specifically relate to absentee balloting, it does in that obviously in this last election and in recent elections, more and more Minnesotans are voting by absentee ballot. I don't think because they particularly want to cast an absentee ballot, but because they want to vote early and they want to get their voting out of the way. So one of the major arguments for including an early voting provision in this bill, and hopefully it will become law, is so that Minnesotans who do want to vote early, either because they're going to be absent from the precinct or as a matter of convenience, are able to do so so that they can cast a regular ballot instead of an absentee ballot. Because if you cast a regular ballot, even if you're doing it, you know, a few days before the election, it's much more likely that it will be accepted, much, much more likely that it will be accepted versus an absentee ballot, which, as we all know, has all of, you know, many problems related to whether it will be, how it's administered and whether it will be accepted or rejected. Some of those I do believe we took care of, we will take care of if this bill becomes law, but just a little pitch for early voting for why I think it's needed.
Some other provisions that if you would skim over the fiscal note, there are, it does indicate that some of the changes that are being made will very likely lead to less mistakes and less rejected absentee ballots, so that there would be also, because of the balloting being, the ballots being cast, the absentee ballots being cast during that period of 30 days before the election, that there will be cost savings to the two local governments, at least in net.
Thank you. I also had questions, and I think the provision was, I think the bill summary, Senator Bonas, so she's not here, obviously, but the early primary. Obviously, we've had this discussion for 20 years.
Mr. Chairman, we had testimony in the State and Local Government Operations Committee from all the major parties that representatives from the party structure that supported taking this step.
There's no question that change to an early primary would obviously have an impact in terms of the precinct caucus system. What's your thought in terms of the integration of one with the other?
Beg pardon, Mr. Chairman?
What was your thought in terms of the integration of our present system in Minnesota, although it's there's not a legal imprimatur, but the caucus, which is in statute, to our district conventions, congressional district conventions, state conventions, which finish up usually the second week of June.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there is that same sequence of events. They just all happened earlier. And one of the really big benefits for voters, aside from the candidates themselves being chosen and having the campaign be among the selected candidates of the different parties, is the impact that it has on our military voters. With having a September primary, it is a very hard turnaround to have a September 10th or 11th primary and then to have an election the first week of November to get the absentee ballots out to our military personnel and Americans living abroad who are Minnesota citizens. And with an earlier primary, that issue would also be resolved so that we would not have ballots coming in from military personnel in particular that failed to arrive by election day. At least the window would be, it still might happen, but the window would be much much larger. So it's, that would be a real improvement in the voting system if the primary were earlier and the ballots could be prepared well in advance for the general election.
And in the bill, when does the early primary first take effect? Next 20, year?
2010.
Next
okay,
year,
so
Mr. Chair.
For next year's election cycle.
So, Mr. Chair, that is why we are hoping that this, that we will pass this bill this year, so that it could, we would need to do it this year, obviously, instead of next.
And in addition, we did pass some election legislation last year, but the in terms of the legislature and our constitutional officers, only the House was up. And it seemed to me that it would be better to put particularly these election administration provisions and the early primary in a bill this year, so that rather than a year in which the Senate and the House and all the constitutional officers and the members of Congress are up for election, that it just made more sense to act on it this year.
Senator West, you emphasized absentee voting. My question was more just toward the extra legal process that we've become used
right,
to.
Right, no, I understand.
So I recognize that would not be within the bill, but what's anticipated in terms of the calendar? You know, next year, 2010, we would have state conventions for both parties for governor sometime in June. And I think we've had conventions as late, I'm going to ask for some help from Senator Jay, Senator Oldham. It seems to me that the last, pardon?
Middle of 10th, 11th, that weekend, usually the second.
I want to say there have been a couple of Republican state conventions that have been even the latter part of June, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not connected to him too much, so I don't know exactly when.
Okay, I'll withdraw the question to yourself then.
Mr. Chairman, it's unfortunate that Senator Bonoff's not here to explain that, but maybe Mr. Bodern can give us that timetable from the delete all amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the amendment really relates only to when the primary would be held, and that would be the second Tuesday in June. As far as caucus dates, and Mr. Watson can jump in on this if he has anything to add, but that's a matter for the parties to determine. I believe that has been taken into account as far as any tech bill changes in the bill, but.
Well, yeah, and that was the purpose to my question, is that my question doesn't relate to what's within state statute. So it's a political question, not a statutory question relative to the bill, but there must have been some discussion either within the committee or informally. Just curious as to what's anticipated. For instance, what's the filing deadline with the early primary? That must be in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, there are some adjustments that basically everything is, there's an additional allowance of time before the primary. You'll see, for example, on section 59 on page 33, I believe that's the deadline for affidavits of candidacy, and that's been expanded. It's a floating deadline that refers to the primary, and that's been adjusted to no more than 84 days before and no less than 70 days before the primary.
Okay, so that would be roughly what, mid-March would be the filing deadline? Okay, so Senator West and Senator Stevens, if whatever the date is, March 10th is the filing deadline, or March 15th or something is the filing deadline. You know, right now we have state conventions somewhere 3 to 6 weeks before the filing deadline, 4 to 6 weeks. So would it be anticipated that we would have, if a party chose to have a state convention for constitutional officers and statewide federal positions, that endorsing convention would be February 1st?
They certainly could do that.
Okay. And congressional districts have usually been about a month before that. So would you have congressional district conventions January 1st and then state Senate district conventions, December 1st. I'm curious as the
end. Mr. Chairman, we have often had our precinct offices, and within a week and a half, we've had our Senate district things. So I think the schedule moves a whole lot faster, or certainly is able to move a whole lot faster than that. I think that's my thought. I'm sorry.
Well, that's, I was working backwards, not forwards, and that's why I was wondering if there was any discussion about this within the committee or subcommittee. And I'm still opposed to an early primary. Although, let me just kind of play it out. This past year, in both parties, we had an unusual influx of people for the caucus, the precinct caucuses, which were February 5th. And obviously, all the emphasis was on the presidential election. Those precinct delegates elected then were involved, not in our races, because the state senate wasn't up, but were involved in state house races, the endorsement contest, the U.S. Senate seat at the DFL state convention, obviously not at the Republican state convention. So I'm just trying to figure out, say in the presidential process, if we had a situation like we had last year, we have a presidential precinct caucus that takes place, and you know, I don't know about the National Republican Party, the National Democratic Party is going to say that the caucus, our caucus, can't take place, and our primary can't take place until subsequent to Iowa and New Hampshire.
Mr. Chairman, selecting delegates to the national convention is not contradicted by having an early state primary. Many states have an early state primary that doesn't interfere with their. It's not a precedent. This is not the presidential.
No, Senator Russ, I understand that. What I'm talking about is the intersection between the calendar we've used, the calendar imposed upon us, and this is more of a Democratic consideration by the National Democratic Party, and how that would intersect with what we've done. It's not to argue necessarily against an early primary, because I understand the reasons for an early primary, but I'm curious as to how it impacts on a calendar that we've been utilizing.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess I would have to say that, you know, Senator Bonhoff's bill is on the floor, and I don't know that either Senator Sieben or I are prepared to give it that kind of thorough analysis that you're asking for now here, as opposed to asking for those questions.
Maybe I should say that.
I would
floor,
appreciate that, because I think I know I might give incorrect information, and I don't know how familiar Senator Sieben is, but Senator Bonhoff still is on the floor.
Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I think what would happen is that the whole party process would telescope into a shorter time period, and at least in the DFL party, you know, there's kind of a progression of when the congressional district conventions are and all those things. And some of those, I think, would have to be more flexible. I know in our rural districts, they have a longer time period for their Senate district conventions or the county conventions, which sometimes, it is before or even after the congressional district conventions, which is a little more unusual than the metro area. But, you know, we often have 5 or 6 weeks between the precinct caucuses and the Senate district convention, and clearly that's going to be telescoped to maybe 2 or 3 weeks. But I think that is more of a party function, and I think that since the parties have all said that they were supporting this, they actually probably had some conversations about what it would do to their calendars and are really
well. That's yeah, Senator Higgins. That's why I asked. And don't misunderstand me. There are certainly some pluses. In fact, that kind of compressed calendar is a spectacular idea for all of us incumbents. Because boy, you're going to have a tough time on it. A challenge to an incumbent in that kind of compressed time period. Believe me, Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, in that Senator Bonhoff and myself were in a endorsing thing last year. She came to me, so I'm a co-author with her on the bill, and I'm for the early primary. And we talked about the parties, and we kind of decided that there, you know, we could go to them, and they say, "Well, we'd like it then." be kind of a hodgepodge of how the Republicans want to do it and how the Democrats want to do it and the independents want to do it. So we decided, well, let's just move the bill forward, and the parties will sift this out on their own. If we say these are the dates that are the dates of the elections and the dates that you file, everybody's just going to have to shuffle a little bit on how they want to do it, and they'll hopefully, you know, just move it up a little bit. So I'm thinking that it will, I'm pretty sure it'll work itself out.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
I actually think it could work both ways for incumbents. It could be an advantage, but it also could be a disadvantage because we're in session during when all this is happening. And so it makes our time limited. So in both cases, having a summer to campaign can help an incumbent. It can also help a challenger.
In terms of the primary, as opposed to the convention.
As a primary challenge.
Right? I guess I was thinking of the convention system. Senator Berlin?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I also have concerns about a June primary because we are in session and until almost that time. And we can't raise money during the time we're in session, but an opponent running in primary could. And it's much more difficult for us to be out campaigning when we're in session. So, you know, I've always had concerns about this, and I just want to express that.
You know, think about that. I guess that would make sure in the even numbered year we never, ever have a special session. So that'd be popular with the populace.
Well, Senator Cohen, not everyone's district is affected by special.
Mr. Chair.
By primaries as much.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify to Senator Berlin, opponents cannot raise money from PACs or lobbyists during session either. So we can raise money from individuals just as our challengers can, but challengers, even though they're not elected yet, are prohibited from raising money during session from PACs or lobbyists.
Senator Day.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I will tell you, we had Senator Bonhoff and I had hours of discussion on this. That was the last thing we thought about. We didn't get into who's elected incumbents and challengers, and it was just the timing. So I can tell you, Senator Bonhoff never once mentioned anything about incumbents or challengers or whatever. So.
Senator O'Blin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've been opposed to moving up the primary for a long time, and this has been discussed the whole time I've been here in the legislature. And I think we're thinking about what's good for us and not the voting public, who don't want longer campaigns, and they don't want this process stretched out. If we are actually having endorsing conventions maybe in early February, that's 9 months of campaigning before the November election. And I just think that I think it's going to add to the cost of campaigns. It's going to just wear voters out so that they lose interest in what's happening. Their focus is in the last couple of months before the election. And I really struggle. It's one thing to be thinking about congressional and statewide elections, but when we move that primary up, that means all the county commissioners have to file early, all of the county attorneys, the sheriffs, people who, that whole local group has to decide that when they're going to run. Then you have lame ducks for a long period of time. If they decide not to file, then they're, in office for until the 1st of January, and, it's kind of a lame duck. And I just think that we don't serve the public well by stretching out this campaign season. It might serve politicians well, but I don't think it serves the public well. And, if we have to move it up some, I would propose we look at August. But I certainly, in fact, I would, on page 71, I would like to move that we strike June on page 71.31 and put in August.
We have Senator O'Brien's motion in front of us. Senator Thomas, you had your hand up.
You did a pretty good job. But I was just thinking that one of the issues for us, I would think, is, I mean, we get accused enough of voting based on how we think we're going to get reelected or not. And if we're right in the middle of a session while we're also in the middle of campaigning, it's just going to be magnified that much more. And I'm kind of thinking that maybe I don't like the idea of a June primary either. But on an unrelated note, Mr. Chairman, are we going to do the whole agenda today?
I hope so.
Okay. In that case, anybody who's here for the Economic Development Conference Committee, I'm going to delay the start until 1 o'clock so you can all leave if you want. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
Again, I feel...
It doesn't appear that any takers.
A bit awkward in changing Senator Bonhoff's bill here, which is, again, already on the floor with this language. And I wonder whether the debate on what the date is Senator Roebling would be much better done with Senator Bonhoff defending her bill along with Senator Day and having the debate on the Senate floor. So I would hope that if you do want to move the date, that you would have the debate on the Senate floor and not here.
Senator Rust, I was going to make exactly the same point, but Senator Roebling, I could well support your amendment. I'm not going to support it here. And certainly we don't have formal rules within committee, so the motion's in order. I think in the absence of Senator Bonhoff, and currently this was her bill, I think, to be fair to her, as the author of the provision what's now this omnibus election bill, she should be present for the debate. As I said, I'm not unsympathetic to your amendment. But again, you can certainly make the motion if you so choose.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was thinking either I would offer that or strike this entire section, although there's many, many sections on the summary. On page 2, the early primary involved many references in law that would have to be deleted from this delete-all amendment. But I could do that, and then we could just have the debate on her bill alone as a standalone bill, too, which I think might be more appropriate, because if it stays in this bill right now, I'm not voting for the bill. And it has some provisions that I think are essential for passage, whereas, if we get to debate the standalone bill, I would feel a lot better about that.
Mr. Chairman, once again, I would think that the amendment to delete those provisions would be much more appropriate on the Senate floor than in this committee where Senator Bonhoff is not present, nor are any of the other authors except for Senator Seaman and myself. And I'm perfectly happy to talk about any of the provisions, and Senator Pappas, that the three of us have put in here, but I would just ask the committee's indulgence not to accept amendments that change the bills if the authors are not here. Although obviously pretty fair game on the Senate floor, and quite frankly, I don't know whether June is the right date either, and I would like to have a little bit more discussion, and maybe August is better. Even to the point, once again, the September primary, we have indications that the Secretary of State's office points out to us, we haven't had this happen yet, but it may, and it's not certainly beyond the pale, that there would be a truly contested primary election that would not be resolved very quickly with regard to the turnaround for absentee ballots going out to our military voters, and we could get a lawsuit from the Department of Justice filed against us. I think it's just a courtesy toward military voters, but there may be some legal implications that haven't occurred yet, but they may. I do think we should take seriously moving up the primary. But once again, I think this is a debate for Senator Bonhoff and to do on the Senate floor.
And I would tend to agree with that. Just make the comment that over the years that I've been on the Finance Committee, which I think goes back to 91. So a while ago. Senator Berlin, you've been on, I think, longer than that. You know, we've used, the Finance Committee, we've used the Tax Committee, which is sort of a term, to put together omnibus bills that are a little bit tangential to finance or tax issues. It's kind of interesting, the last couple of years, for the first time, kind of slid into using the Rules Committee for that purpose, which is unique. But I would agree with Senator Rest, but I'm going to be a little bit careful with starting to rework a bill strictly on policy terms within this committee. You know, sometimes appropriate, but in the absence of Senator Bonhoeff, I have some concerns. Senator Berlin?
Well, my comment is that I think it would have been better to do it just the opposite, to debate Senator Bonhoeff's bill on the floor, and if it passes, then incorporate it into this bill, but not have it in this bill at this point in time.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Roland.
You know, I think I'd like to withdraw my original amendment simply to change the date. And then on page 2 of the summary, it tells us which sections we would all delete to take out the early primary. And then we can either take it up as a separate bill on the floor, or it can be offered as an amendment on the floor to this bill. But I don't want to put this bill in jeopardy in general by having a very controversial policy decision put in it here in the Finance Committee. I think it is very controversial with our members, and there's a lot of different opinions out there about it. So it probably would be best if it were not included in the bill today. And that's what the delete all amendment has. And I would move to take it out sections, like so many sections. It's in parts of, I don't know how to do this.
Well, Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, the best way to do it, I think, would be to make the change either, I don't know what, if Senator Rubin wants to leave the current date in place, you would delete section 132, or you could adjust the date there, but I think it's to leave current law in place as far as the date for the primary. And then you could provide staff with the instructions to remove the conforming changes that appear in the rest of the bill. There are several sections in that list that contain amendments that were from other bills as well.
That would be my motion, then.
Okay, I could just ask a comment from Council. Mr. Watson, would that motion...
Mr. Chairman, that would work. There's another consideration that would be even easier. I don't know if you want to do it because it's easy, but if you just delete the section, the other changes to conform to the change in the date of the primary, I think, are all workable by themselves. They just take out references to current dates, September 1, for example, and substitute dates that are so many weeks before and after. So for the most part, they could be left in, even if that's
Chairman, there are campaign finance issues. There are 10A issues in this provision.
They can solve just
Mr. Chairman, if you recall, I think we looked at one of the conforming changes where the length of time preceding the primary is extended. I'm not sure if that would continue to work with the September primary and the period of time between the September primary and the general election. That might need to revert to its original form. I think perhaps the original motion is best at this point.
Senator Babbitts.
And Mr. Chairman, just a question for Senator Rest. When we were talking about this omnibus bill, I thought you indicated to me that you were only going to include non-controversial issues, and that's why you thought that Senate Bill 160 was too controversial to be included in here. And that's the one about door knocking in apartment buildings. And so I noticed that's not in here, and that's a lot less controversial than moving the primary date.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, when we consider the controversial, quite frankly, I didn't consider the early primary controversial because we had had testimony from the Secretary of State about the turnaround time for September and why that was a problem for military voters. We had testimony from the all three parties, officials in all three parties. And until, quite frankly, I mean, I know that Senator Roebling objected, but We had bipartisan support. We had bipartisan authors on the bill, and quite frankly, this bill has had more discussion in the Finance Committee than the time that it took to have the building bill heard in the state and local government, because it seemed to be a good idea and to move forward.
Well, Senator Rest,
So I'm not saying that you shouldn't talk about it. I'm just saying that Senator Pappas was saying, why was this not considered controversial? Quite frankly, early voting is controversial. I mean, it's Senator Siegman's bill and was put in here. However, my bill on IRB, my bill on runoff elections rather than a recount, my bill on a national voter thing, the presidential primary, those are controversial bills. They all got hearings. They're all either on the floor or in state government finance. They're not in this bill. And I don't think that the early primary rises to the level of controversy either. We have had conversations with our friends on the other side of the aisle. We've had conversations at least remotely with the governor's office, asking them to identify provisions that would be controversial to them. The early primary was not identified as one, although it may be. We know they have concerns about the about early voting, quite frankly, and about some of the absentee balloting provisions.
Well, Senator Rest, I was inclined to vote against Senator Roebling's amendment, but to suggest that there's been a lot more discussion about this in the Finance Committee.
I was just responding to Senator Pappas's question about why we did not consider it controversial. That's the only thing. And just by comparison, saying that the bill had more discussion here even than it did. If it had had this lengthy discussion and had been opposed by one of the major parties, or we'd had some indication that it's unworkable or whatever, I don't think you would have seen it up here. Yet.
Well, several of my answers to the comment. Again, my question is, I talked about comments and so on. That was more of a facetious comment. My question is been aimed at, there is a significant domino effect, both statutorily and in an extra legal way, relative to an election process that's grown up over the years. Now, whether that process is handled well or not handled well is certainly an issue for the legislature to debate. But simply because there are some of us who don't serve on your committee,
I understand that,
who have some sense of this stuff. I mean, I've had involved.
Just responding to Senator Pappas.
Okay, and I'll just give you one example. 20 years ago, I had significant involvement with the National Democratic Party relative to precinct caucus day and what data ought to be used or not used. And that continues to be an issue more so on the Democratic side than the Republican side. But it affects thousands of people, and if we use last year's caucuses as an example, it affects something like, I don't know, over 300,000 people. So that's why I think some of us have these questions who don't serve your committee. Senator Berglund?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe this has failed to pass the floor of the Senate in the previous years. So to say that you don't think it's controversial, I think, would be probably not a fair statement. Well,
Mr. Chairman, I was only based my comments on the experience we had this year on the bill, and I do know that the presidential primary has been very, very controversial, and that has not been taken up. Senator Walker last year.
Okay. Well, we have Senator Roebling's motion in front of us, as explained by Mr. Bodden. Further discussion on Senator Roebling's motion. If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 Motion fails. Further questions for Senator Siegman or Senator Rest? Edson moves that Senate File 1331 as amended be recommended to pass. Senator Betzel.
Chair, just one question. We have something else in our packet that has some election related stuff in there. There's some blank section. It's a 10A something. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, it's done in a slightly unusual format, but that was the best way to show all of the repealers that are now contained in Senate File 1331.
Okay. Further discussion? All right. We have, I think we've got Senator Messing's motion. No further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Lori?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1284 is the Gambling Control Board's agency bill. I think, as most members know, our charitable organizations have been struggling over recent years. Last year, we provided them some relief in terms of additional expenditure limits for lawful purposes and put in law that the Gambling Control Board would work over the interim with the industry to find ways to help administratively restructure the oversight of the industry to help them as much as we can. And this is the result of that exercise, and it is supported by the industry and the control board, and there is no known opposition. Since this is the Finance Committee, I wasn't planning on going through every piece of the bill. I certainly could if members wish to, but I'll focus initially on the finance implications, which are rather minimal. The first is really a kind of a compliance incentive in a way. The charitable entities currently are required to apply for a permit for exempt gambling operations. Typically, raffles is the biggest one, and they're supposed to send in the application more than 30 days prior to the event. There is not a great deal of compliance with that, and so we created a rush order, and the fee for a rush order delivered less than 30 days before the event would increase from $50 to $100. That would generate about $25,000 of additional fees in the first year, but then I think the assumption is that the entities would catch on and start delivering their requests more than 30 days, and those fees would drop right back down to about $5,000 in each subsequent year. The other finance piece is an increase for civil penalties from $500 to a maximum of $1,000. This is in line with most other civil penalties throughout statute, and a penalty allowed for organizations that overspend their charitable purposes allotment for multiple years. That provision would generate about another $5,000 per year after it was fully implemented. So that's the extent of the financial implications. I would stand for questions and appreciate member support.
Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, Senator Betzold, do you want to move the bill for Senator Murray?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move that Senate File 1284, as amended, second growth, be recommended to pass.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Erickson Wells, Senate File 1155.
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much. This is a bill on adult foster care, and it has no state impact. It's a bill that actually gives flexibility to the local levels. As we're taking some money away from Health and Human Services budgeting to licensed providers for adults in the disability community, that they will be able to go from the capacity limit of 4 residents per foster home to 5. And obviously the bill has traveled through and passed through Senator Berglund's committee, is referred to you now to make sure that there's no fiscal impact on the state level. So, local flexibility bill.
I'm Chair, I'll move the division report from the Health and Human Services Budget Division.
Okay. Senator Betzold's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And I'll move Senate File 1155 be recommended to pass as amended. For Senator Arizona.
Senator Roebling?
I think this is a good idea, because I do think that the homes have the capacity to handle up to 5 people without any problems. And in fact, as a tip off to Senator Pappas, I have to leave conference committee early today because I'm trying to place my sister-in-law, who has mental illness, in a group home that has 4 residences right now, and we have to take her out to look at the home. And I do think that there could be some cost savings per person, because they have to be staffed. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a lot of sense if they can manage 5 individuals that we try that. The one thing I was a little concerned about, and I saw this in Senator Lori's bill, and I'm assuming it's not in here because I just was able to read the summary quickly, we don't have a video camera issue in this bill, do we? Where they would be able to put a video camera in instead of a person for overnight stays.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, no.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, for other group homes, we did this back in 2003, although they haven't used the opportunity to have more than 4 for some reason. I believe with this bill that Senator Erickson Holtz has a constituent who will be using it.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next we have Senate File 1154. I understand that there was some concern with the fees, and that Senator Erickson was going to suggest a change to the bill, but first, Senator Berglund moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Schmokes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been talking to Mr. Massman on the side about the fiscal impact, and Mr. Massman, maybe you could clear that up.
Mr. Chairman, members, the fees in Article 3, the fee reductions, both the repeal of the sunset and the additional 10% reduction, I believe are not controversial. The governor has proposed them. Both the House, I believe the House, Senate, and Governor all have them in their budget position in the omnibus Health and Human Services bill. So to not have them in 2 places, the motion would be to delete Article 3 of the bill.
Senator Berglund makes that motion.
It was in the division report. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that was in the division report that was already adopted.
Already, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Did it already.
Okay.
I withdraw my motion.
All right, so then we have, we understand the bill. Senator Berglund, do you wish to?
Yeah, I'll move that Senate Bill 1154 be recommended to pass as amended.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senator Berglund, thank you.
Senator Schmokes. Okay, now we've got 2 bills left that are committee members. Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I have a conference committee at 11, so if you could take me next.
Senator Betzold, is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Senator Pappas, Senate File 1153, there is not a division report.
Comfortable, careful.
Yeah.
You sure?
Mr. Chairman and members, there is an amendment to this bill that the original introduction was for all domestic partners, and the amendment would restrict it to just domestic partners of the same sex.
And before we act on the amendment, as I understand it, Senator Betzel, this bill was in your division, and a request by Senator Pappas to have it withdrawn from the division, but that's done with your consent. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we did hear the bill in the state government budget division. There was a significant fiscal note, so the bill was laid over. We are done meeting for the year, so I indicated that if there's any desire to resurrect this or any other issue that we laid over, it would have to be done in full committee because we don't have more time for the budget division to continue the meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A1 amendment.
Okay. And Senator Pappas, we have in front of us the old fiscal note. Maybe I could just ask for a comment from Mr. Mossman as to how your amendment will deal with the fiscal note we have in front of us.
Mr. Chairman, members, the original fiscal note is for all domestic partners. If you look on page 3 of the bill and just follow the math, the assumption of 400 domestic partners of the same sex at a 75% take-up rate and multiply that towards the estimated additional cost per member of $5,367 per year, all of the numbers on the front of the fiscal note, instead of being $12,168,000, I believe would be $1,610,000 all the way across. So that would be the estimated impact per year to the state government or state employees and insurance fund.
And Mr. Chairman, just for means of comparison, the University of Minnesota adopted benefits for same-sex domestic partners, and their cost has been approximately $850,000 in 2009. And I actually don't know what their employment base is compared to the state, but I just thought I would share that information for comparison.
Okay,
we're in the ballpark here.
All right. We have Senator Pappas' motion on the A1 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move Senate File 1153 as amended be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, I support this policy, but I just don't understand where we're getting the money.
Senator Berglund, Mr. Chairman, from the State Employees Insurance Fund, and they have a very healthy reserve. Mr. Stanton, what did we figure out it was, about $70 million or something?
Mr. Stanton, did you wish to testify?
Mr. Chair, is this on? Mr. Chair, members, the reserve for this state insurance fund.
I'm sorry. If I could just ask you to identify yourself.
Since
I've known you for years.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Russ Stanton, Interfaculty Organization. The insurance fund is a self-insured fund, of course, and they have reserves. They have about a 16.7% reserve, which I think comes to about $100 million. And then they had an excess reserve, but I can't tell you how much that excess reserve is right now because AFSCME and MAEP just settled their contracts, and I know they're going to use the some of that excess reserve for buying down premium to the agencies. So, but they certainly have a reserve of about $100 million right now. Which is about 2 months' worth of premium.
And Mr. Chairman, this proposal was brought to me by Mr. Stanton with the Interfaculty Organization. Their union supports this.
So, Mr. Chairman, just a comment. Perhaps if we have adequate reserves, we should at some point in the near future look at whether the state can afford to contribute to MCHA, since we don't do that.
Senator Roble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just question adding any new programs or any new expenses right now, new benefits. I just don't think it's a good time to do it. And, you know, I know we had some extra funds in the state employee fund last year, and I think we each got our Benny card. That was an outcome of having a little bit of a surplus in there. That's certainly something that helps all the current employees out. And, you know, there's always a possibility that we can hold down our costs of benefits if we have the reserve fund, just like they're planning to do this year with the freeze that they're negotiating, that some of that reserve fund will be used to cover those costs. And I don't know how long that can be sustained, but if there's only 2 months worth of reserves sitting there, that isn't excessive. It sounds like a lot of money, but when you consider the cost of the premiums we're paying, that is not excessive. And so I just think it's not the right time to be adding new benefits.
Further discussion. So did you wish to testify for a second?
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nathan Morocco. I'm the director of the State Employee Group Insurance Program that you're speaking about here. I just wanted to comment on the issue of reserves. As Mr. Stein indicated, we did just go through the bargaining process with the two largest unions, and they made it very clear to us that they had one goal in mind for the next 2 years as a result of a 0% premium increase, and that was to keep the cost of the program down. We did so. We bargained with both those unions with a zero increase to the plan design for the next 2 years and with a 0% premium in 2010. The only way that we were able to accomplish that was to take every dollar that we had in the program and direct it into keeping those costs down. The reserves that we currently have are the reserves that we are required or requested to do by the Department of Commerce in order to ensure that we don't come forward at any time and ask for money to bail the program out. 2 months of claims, the 16.7 is actually below the industry standard that they would expect for a fully insured program. But because we are a government entity and we are a large program, we are allowed to run on a lower reserve than typically would it be expected by the Department of Commerce. So with that, Mr. Chair, I just want to emphasize that we have spent every dollar. This would, in essence, be a cost against the program. It would need to come out somewhere, either through an additional expense to the agencies through a higher premium, or perhaps in a plan design change such as an increase in copay or some form of coinsurance. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. Further discussion on Senate File 1153. Senator Pappas has moved that Senate File 1153 is meant to be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you,
Senator
you.
Pappas. Okay, the next, going back to the earlier part of the agenda, Senate File 1036, Senator Metzen.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report for Senate File 1036.
Okay, we have the Betzel motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is a state labor contracts ratification bill. 97 or 98% of the ratifications were done last year, but there were a couple of ones that hung on. One, I think the nurses went to arbitration, and a couple of reasons why the other two didn't get passed. This bill ratifies the labor contracts that compensation plans for employees that was negotiated with the executive branch. We went through the LCC Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Like I said, most of the plans were negotiated 1.5 years ago, but these are the three or four ones that State University Administrative Service faculty, and another one was doctors and specialized services, working in state facilities in greater Minnesota, and salary increases for the some of the employees at the State Board of Investment, and the Minnesota Nurses Association contract went to binding arbitration, but that settled eventually for 3.25%, which is about most of the contracts last year settled for that same amount. I think that, did we do this amendment for the contracts for the ratification for the state university faculty amendment? That's for this year? That's for the next biennium, and this is with Minsky, and it's for the next biennium. The faculty continues to get paid at the same rate for the next 2 years with no steps across or board increases. So that's probably can't answer for the people that bargained for this, but I would think that would be kind of a theme that will go forward for a year or two because of the economic conditions out there. But so that's what this bill does. Most of it is that the last year's catch up with these four or five units, and essentially they're the same increases that AFSCME, MAPE, and all the other ones we already ratified were compensated for.
Senator
Roblin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm puzzling over this because it says Minnesota State Faculty, State College Faculty, and then there is nothing there for 7108, but then it is showing a 6.05% biennial increase. Is this the new one? Is this the one that's going to take effect on July 1st? And if it is, and it's supposed to be a 0%, how come it's showing 6.05?
But with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll let Mr. Hubinger talk with the committee on that one.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Senator Robley, I think you're looking at the estimated costs for 2008 and 2009, and it sounded like you were talking about the Minnesota State College faculty. That contract was actually ratified by the 2008 legislature. The contracts that are being ratified in this bill are in bold and have the carrot on the left-hand margin there. There is one contract for Minsky that is being ratified in this bill. It's the Minnesota State University Administrative and Service Faculty, and that contract provides for a 1.5% across the board in July of 07 and July of 08.
Mr. Hubinger, didn't this bill include the newest one from the Minnesota?
That's correct.
And that is zero.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, the contract with the state university faculty shows up on the next spreadsheet. That's only got one entry on that page, and that shows no across-the-board increases. It does show some costs for the increases in insurance and some ongoing provisions in their contract that provide seniority-based increases. That shows a 0.49% increase in cost in that 10-11 biennium and a 1.31 for the succeeding biennium.
So, Mr. Chair,
salaries remain.
So the salaries remain, but there was a cost.
Yeah.
There is a cost at stake. I just wanted to find that out because it was my understanding there was no additional cost at stake.
And I, Mr. Chairman, I visited with some of the governor's folks, and they're 100% supportive of what we're ratifying, hopefully ratifying this morning.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Roebling,
I know that this goes back a couple of years, some of these contracts, but it is puzzling. And a little perplexing when we see increases of 12%, 35% to 59%, 4.5%. There's some pretty big increases in here. And
I don't know how the public would react to it, but I'm sure their expectation would be that if we give these big increases, if we ratify these, that there's going to have to be a hard line freeze on what comes in the next biennium, because that's what's happening in the private sector, and I think that it will be the expectation that we won't be seeing increases like this for a couple of years.
Okay, let me just say, I didn't negotiate these contracts, the Republican administration did, so, and the one that I think you're probably referring to, and I'm not bashful about it, nor is the governor's people, but the State Board of Investment employees. They've been way behind in their industry forever. And what we do in Minnesota in that area, and of course that's financed out of the fund, not direct general fund dollars, so keep that in mind. What we're doing here in Minnesota is we're a pretty good training ground for educating these people in the State Board of Investments, and we lose them, and we're losing them, seems like, every month. And we have a lot of catch-up to do in this area, and that's the one that's a little might be skewed to some people here, but that's the explanation why that one. The other ones are almost 100%, like 3.25%. They're not at 27% or 22%. Just that one narrow part of our government that does this board of investment. So that's the answer to the and the governor. I again in that area, I met with Mr. Hansen a week ago, and I said, "Are you still on board? Is the governor still on board in the State Board of Investments? Because it does look a little high." Absolutely, the commissioner Hansen told me that the governor's on board. So that's the deal.
Okay. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Minson moves that Senate File 1036 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you very
then,
much.
The last bill, Senator Pappas.
There's no crowd.
Count my votes.
Okay, Senator Betzel, no division report, Senate File 798.
Mr. Chair, there is no division report. It doesn't appear that there's a fiscal impact to this bill. This is Senate File 798. I did ask to have the bill sent to the Finance Committee because there may be a possible fiscal impact. There appears to be no. What the bill does is it affects the equal access to justice law, which allows citizens, if they need to sue the government or sue government agencies, and if they are successful, to get their attorney's fees. Unfortunately, attorney's fees were set back in the early 1980s, and they're capped at $125 per hour. There are individuals that have probably good cases, but there's few attorneys that will even take the cases because of the low threshold. This bill simply strikes out the cap on attorney's fees and would have the administrative law judge determine what is a reasonable rate. That is the bill, and as I said, I was sent here because I anticipate there may be some issues within the agencies that they thought with the cap rises they may have to pay attorney's fees, basically if they screw up, but I have not been advised that there is any cost here. So that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Moskow.
Mr. Chair and members, and there is actually a completed fiscal.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
For not having it. I'll have it copied for you, but there is no cost to the bill. There is some conversation by the Office of Administrative Hearings that okay. They believe that it is extremely rare that they would have these instances arise, and that they don't anticipate any cost.
Okay, further discussion on the bill.
There's no discussion. I'm not aware of anybody's here on the bill, Mr. Chair, so I would move Senate File 798 be recommended to pass.
Okay, on Senator Betzel's motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Members, that concludes the agenda. I'd like to see Senator Higgins, Senator Betzel, and Senator Tomasoni afterwards. We're adjourned.
In Tomasoni's office?
Stay right here. Mr. Rowland, I'd be delighted to see you as well, but you don't share a conference committee.
No, I have to run off too
long. Give our regards to him. So. Can I get a copy of that from my file? I'm so thankful.
Okay, so I haven't heard of this before. Thank you.